Hey!
Are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
And now here is your guide to these adventures of mine.
Hurry up and rescue this
now, please.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, welcoming you to another edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. This episode, I don't know, I don't have the date right in front of me, but anyway, this episode is entitled Pioneer Days, and this allows Fibber and Molly to kind of waft nostalgic about the Old West, and they have these cute little Old West characters that they play throughout the show. Very intriguing, and it's really amazing how their voices change so surprisingly when they go into these characters, these Old West characters. But I think it's really fitting with the Pioneer Days episode, and I just thought I would just let you enjoy that, and so enjoy this episode and all the others, and I'll probably introduce those separately. But anyway, enjoy this Fibber McGee and Molly Pioneer Days episode, and I'll see you all back here next week.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Bring a little springtime into your kitchen with Johnson's Glow Coat. Yes, sir, Glow Coat will make your linoleum floors so bright and cheerful and downright beautiful that you'll think of the sunny days of April and May. And Glow Coat will do that little job almost by itself because it's so easy to use. There's no rubbing or buffing with self-polishing Glow Coat. You simply apply and let dry. And in 20 minutes, your floors gleam with a beautiful, tough, long-lasting polish. Glow Coat protects linoleum and other floor surfaces against wear, dirt, and moisture. It actually adds greatly to their life. If you haven't yet tried Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat, get a package this week. Notice how smoothly and evenly it dries, without any streaking. You'll be delighted with its uniform high quality. And you'll understand why millions of women everywhere give first choice to Glow Coat. Children run around the streets with toy pistols yelling, "Bang, bang, you're dead," they call it cops and robbers. But when grown-ups do it, it's Pioneer Day in Wistful Vista. And here, all dressed up for the celebration, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Do I look as silly as I feel in this calico dress and sunbonnet, McGee?
Matter of fact, kiddo, you look real pretty.
Uh-huh.
Regular prairie flower. Hey, where's my sheriff's badge? I gotta have my sheriff... Oh, here it is, here it is.
I hope those horse pistols aren't really loaded, McGee. Hey, you're nice to have hanging around, but I'd rather you did it with your feet on the ground.
No, I just got blank cartridges in them. Gotta do a lot of shooting when they hold up the bank this afternoon.
When who holds up the bank?
Oh, didn't I tell you? We're reenacting the big bank holdup of 1897. When Bart Younger and his gang held up the Ranchers National and got away with $20,000 in gold and kissed the banker's daughter on the way up.
Did they chase the robbers?
The banker's daughter did. Yeah, she chased him all over the territory, caught him, and made him marry her. After that, he went around the country lecturing on how crime doesn't pay. You see, she was kind of... Huh?
Why do you keep leaning over forward like that?
I can't help it. These high-heeled boots got me off balance. Have to swing my guns a little farther behind, I guess.
Tell me more about this holdup. Who's doing it?
More Toops and Wallace Wimple are going to play the parts of Bart Younger and his brother.
Yeah?
I meet them in the street as they come out, and I shoot them down dead.
Uh-huh.
You see,
Come in, stranger. Come in a shooting or come in a smiling. The welcome you ask for is the welcome you get.
Oh, well, rope me for a doggie if it ain't old Doc Gamble. Howdy, Doc.
Come in and set a spell, Sawbones. Ma, shove that pile of bar traps away from the fire so's Doc can hunker down and warm his britches.
Oh, stop it, you Saturday matinee cowhand. You're about as western as the Fulton Fish Market.
Ooh.
I'm willing to go along with this Pioneer Day malarkey for 24 hours, but I'm developing an allergy to blue jeans and bow legs. Even legitimate bow legs, like yours.
Did you know he was going to reenact the bank holdup this afternoon, Doctor?
More Toops and Wallace Wimple are going to play Bart Younger and his brother, Doc. I meet him outside the bank and I shoot him down dead. Going to be newsreels took of it and everything.
Oh, fine. Yeah? Fine. You'll be so busy mugging into the cameras they could walk off with the whole bank. You probably even fancied yourself getting a movie contract out of this.
Well, now that sure would be nice, wouldn't it, Paul? Might stick a big wad of chewing tobacco in your face and tell him you're Billy the Cod.
All I can say is you better have plenty .45 caliber cork plugs ready today, Sawbones. When Sheriff McGee starts throwing lead, every Boy Scout compass in town is going to be pointing straight at the cemetery.
Well, I don't know who first thought up this crackpot idea of Pioneer Day, rum-dum, but it's paying off handsomely for me. I've treated 3 cases of spur burns, 2 items of bar stool bursitis, and right now I've got a sachet down to the hotel for a strange case of a man with 2 hearts.
Heavenly days, 2 hearts.
2 hearts, 2 clubs, and 1 diamond. Both the hearts were aces.
Ooh.
A thing like that can shorten a man's life considerably. So long now, Jimson Weed.
Doc hasn't got any romance in his system. He thinks this Pioneer Day celebration is kind of childish.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with him, dearie. I know I'll be glad to get out of this long calico skirt.
Why?
Every time I look down and can't find my feet, I get panicky. When do we go downtown?
Anytime now. The bank hold up a sketch to start for any minute.
Get ready to crouch and draw, partner. That knock ain't familiar.
Stand in front of me, Ma, so as I can draw a bead on the varmints over your shoulder.
Use both guns then, Paul. Always one of my ears pierced for earrings. Come in.
Well, what do you know?
Mr. Old Kramer.
Hello there, kid!
Well...
Well, I'm glad to see you again, old-timer. I hear you've been in the Navy all this time.
In the CBs, Johnny. That's the men's department of the Navy.
Well, you're just in time to celebrate Pioneer Day in Wistful Vista, Mr. Oldtimer.
Pioneer Day, eh? Wondered why everybody was wearing them high-heeled boots and sombreros. Reminds me when I first come to this town 9 to 50 years ago. Come out with the Lewis and Clark Expedition.
Horse feathers. The Lewis and Clark Expedition was in 1803.
I says Lewis and Clark, Johnny.
Huh?
I come out with my brother Lewis to clerk in his grocery store.
Well, I guess you were sort of a pioneer here at that, weren't you, Mr. Oldtimer?
Daughter, I was one of the founders of the town. I'd have been here even earlier, but I caught the wrong schooner. Mine had a Mickey in it.
Well, how'd you like the Navy, Oldtimer, frankly?
Frankly, Johnny, I could take it or leave it. I could take it just about as long as I did and leave it with a glad cry. From gold braid, I could stand.
You mean commissioned officers?
No, I mean them blonde gals around the dock. You know me, kids. I'm a man's man till a woman shows up. Then I'm a girl's boy. Any girl's boy.
By the way, whatever became of your girl, Bessie?
Bessie? Bessie. Was she the one with the big bay window that she used to wave to the fellers out of? Was Bessie the little one that always carried a bunch of flowers so she could thumb her nosegay at you when you... Oh, shucks, kids, I don't remember Bessie.
Well, you always were getting engaged and unengaged to different ones, Mr. Oldtimer. You've broken more hearts than the man who cuts the celery at the Y.P. Moore cafeteria.
That ain't the way I hear it. The way I hear it. One feller says, tell a feller, says, if these strikes keep up, it's going to be a long time before you can get a new car, ain't it? Yep, says tell a feller, but it's a great thing for the shoe industry. The pedestrians live so much longer. See you later, kid.
It looks like a Roy Rogers movie set.
Yeah, some of us characters are just as quick on the trigger, too. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Molly, get a load of old lady Carstairs in the pioneer costume. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Ain't she a dish?
Makes her look a little stout, doesn't it?
Ooh.
And if you make any remarks about a pig in a poke bonnet, I...
Oh, no. I never thought of anything making...
Well, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs.
How do you do, Mrs. McGee and Mr. McGee?
Never mind the Mr., ma'am. I ain't no dude. You're addressing the sheriff of this here town. Homestead and hereabouts, are ye?
Why, sure, Paul. The Carstairs is right early pioneers hereabouts, wasn't they, Miss Carstairs?
Oh, yes. Grandpapa was a favorite with the Indians. He wore toupees, you know, which made scalping him a very simple operation. In the Cherokee Indian language, he was known as Old Cabin Keep Getting New Roof.
Never gotten much to red spoons myself, ma'am. Even now, a coat of sunburn makes me reach for my Remington.
Paul, tell Miss Carstairs about the time you and Chick Carson met the Apaches at Sidewinder Gulch.
I don't recollect any such story, Ma.
It ain't a matter of memory, Paul. It's a matter of imagination.
Oh, sure it is. Well, sir, ma'am, it was just about sundown. In the foothills of the superstitions, in the heart of the Apache country. Me and Kit Carson was sitting around the water hole when all of a sudden, nothing happened. That made us suspicious. So we looked around and there surrounding us on all sides was 200 Apaches.
Good heavens, Mr. McGee, how interesting.
What'd you do, Paul? Kill them all?
Nope. Kit started talking sign language to him.
Sign sign language?
Yep. First kid says, there's a Ford in your future. And the Indian flips right back with, standard stations have clean restrooms. Says great crossing ahead. And the engine says, ever tried Johnson's wax on floors and furniture? Well, sir, we knew they had it there. On account of we didn't have any floors or furniture, so we clung onto our cayuses and rid back to Fort Dodge.
You know, I always wondered what was meant by sign language.
Old Paul was expert at it, Miss Carstairs. Him and Wild Bill Bore Dickox. You gotta be going now?
Yes, if you'll excuse me. I must be getting down to the tailor shop.
Having some clothes made, Millicent?
Not for myself, my dear. I'm having a little pair of blue jeans made for my fox terrier.
Blue jeans for your fox terrier? What's the idea, Kirsty?
Oh, just in the spirit of Pioneer Day, Mr. McGee.
Huh?
I thought it would be appropriate if his wagon was covered.
His wagon was covered. Did you ever hear a worse joke?
No, but I bet we will in the next 3 minutes. Incidentally, just where are we going, McGee?
Down to the Bonton department store. Now, that's across the street from the bank. You see, in the old days, the Bonton was the last chance saloon. Real rugged joint.
Oh?
Now, when the bank holdup starts, I step out from the door and I start throwing lead right at him, see? Then the bank.
Heavenly days, what's that?
It's across the street there. Guy in the frock coat and checkered vest in the back of that buckboard.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Yeah. He's probably selling Princess Mahula's Marvel snake oil for man and peace. Come on, let's go over there.
All right, folks, step right up to the tailgate while I expound the wonders of this magic product. Absolutely and positively the greatest discovery of the modern age.
Wilcox!
What on earth is he selling, as if I couldn't guess?
Hurry, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Step right up with your money in your hand. Each and every one of you will want a container of this marvelous labor-saving preparation. The scientific discovery that makes your life worth living and your home worth living in.
Go ahead and ask the man, Grandma.
Is it good for corn, son?
I'm glad you asked me that, Mother. This amazing product is wonderful for corns, bunions, and housemaid's meat. It brings such relief from housework that such small ailments are completely forgotten in the joy of living. Get your container of Johnson's wax before we're sold out, folks. Try it on your floors, furniture, woodwork, harness and saddles, rifle, butts, and luggage. See how it protects, preserves, and saves you hours of housework. And now, while I pass among you with this marvelous invention, and remember, only 9 containers to a customer today, Hambone will play a few musical gems on his old banjo. Hambone, if you please.
Yeah. Just a minute, sir.
Sheriff! Yes. Get the horses ready, Hambone. What's the matter, Sheriff?
Well, Paul wants to know if you got yourself a peddling license for this here medicine show, stranger.
License, ma'am?
You hear, T-Rex, stranger. Failing you got a license, I gotta take you to the calaboose. I represent the law hereabouts. We don't aim to have no fly-by-night drummers taking trade from the local merchants. We aim to build a little church in this here valley. Come now, son. Do I see your license or do you see our hoosegow?
I'll see you later. Let's go, Hambone. Hit the...
Why, you was aiming kind of high, weren't you, Paul?
Yes, Ma didn't want to wing the young'un. He might grow up to be a useful citizen yet. What time do you think it is?
Well, I can't tell, Paul. Can't see the sun on account of this here sunbonnet.
Yep. Often thought of getting me a pocket watch. The chucks, they're all made way back east, and they got different time back there.
Gee, look, here comes Mr. Wimple. Hello, Mr. Wimple.
Oh, hi, Wimp.
Hello, folks. My, isn't this Pioneer Day exciting?
Yeah, you bet. all set to reenact the bank holdup, Wimp?
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. McGee.
Good.
Mark Toops and I were going to dash up on our horses.
Oh.
But we're coming in his Buick instead because horses always make me sneeze. We're both going to wear bananas over our faces, you know.
Bandanas, Mr. Wimple.
No, bananas, Mrs. McGee. We throw the skins down to foil pursuit.
Sweetie Face going to be watching the scene, Wimp?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, Mr. McGee. She may be too tired from her dancing to come downtown.
Dancing, Mr. Wimple? She taking a dancing lesson?
Well, I suppose you might call it that, Mrs. McGee. One of the power lines fell down in that windstorm last night, and Sweetie Face tried to pick it up this morning. When I left, she was still hanging onto it and dancing around like everything.
Why, my gosh, Wimp, she might be electrocuted that way.
Yes.
Is she still mistreating you, Mr. Wimple?
Oh, we have our little moments, Mrs. McGee. She gets impulsive, and I lose my temper, I'm afraid.
Oh.
Last night, after one of our arguments, I went downtown and bought 5 pounds of raw meat.
Well, good for you, Wimp. Did you eat it all?
Oh, no. I put it on my eye, Mr. McGee. Well, goodbye now. I'll see you at the bank.
One of these days, Mr. Wimple is going to turn up.
Oh, hold it. Look yonder. There comes Panaman Perry Bodkin and his pitch-pipe posse. Must be trailing somebody. Here they come. Ride the heart. Chase it.
About time for the gunplay to start, isn't it, McGee?
Yeah, and I hope those newsreel guys are on their toes, too. I told them to focus on my left profile. On account of because...
Well, howdy there, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor. Ma curtsy to the mayor.
Howdy, Your Honor. You're as welcome a sight as unbranded steer.
Thank you, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee. All set for the bank holding up the trivia? Got my holsters tied down and my trigger fingers itching. You sound very authentic as a sheriff, McGee.
Yes, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Had any trouble so far today?
Nary a mite, Mr. Mayor. Folks been giving old two-gun McGee a wide berth. Needs one, too, the way he rolls around in his sleeve.
Incidentally, McGee, how did you get appointed sheriff for today, anyway?
How do you mean? What do you mean, how did I get appointed? I thought up this whole bank robbery stunt, didn't I? Who should ought to have been deserving it better than me?
Okay. I was merely asking, McGee.
Oh.
I guess you were the one who remembered that the James boys once held up this bank.
Not the James boys, Mr. Mayor. Bart Younger it was.
Yeah.
Bart Younger and his brother, Much.
Much was the older Younger.
How was that again, McGee?
I says Bart Younger was the younger. Much was older.
Much older?
Yeah, Much.
You say that the older Younger was much younger?
Yes.
Well, if the older Younger was much younger, how could the younger have been much?
Well, you see, it's like this, Your Honor. Bart the younger,
yeah,
was quite respectable at first. He was even an elder in the church.
Yeah. Just the younger was an elder. The elder younger...
Wait a minute, please. Now, let me get this straight.
Oh, of course. What don't you understand, Mr. Mayor?
Any of it. You say there were two younger. Bart and Much.
Exactly. Much was the older younger. The younger was the elder.
Well, if the younger was an elder younger, how did the older elder, Much Younger, if Bart was not an elder, simply older than the younger, which is to say that the elder...
You're getting it now. Go on.
This doesn't make sense. Just because a man is an elder doesn't make an older younger. The younger brother.
Much
was younger than older. Younger than the elder. The older was the... It was the man. It was the... I got...
McGee. Will you excuse me? I wish to make a telephone call.
Oh, important, Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Yes. I want to call Abbott and Costello. What? I want to know who's on first.
Well, I don't know how a man who gets as easily confused as he does ever got to be mayor.
Oh, well, clearly, he's a simple soul. He just don't. Oh, my gosh, time for the holdup. Look, there's the newsreel cameras. Everything is set.
Shall I wait here with you?
Sure. We're just using blank cartridges now, Molly. One side there, please, folks. One side. I'm playing the sheriff.
Oh, there goes the robbers into the bank.
They'll be lucky to get out with the money they got on them. You can't fill your fountain in there without three co-signers.
Now, take it easy, folks. Take it easy. Give me elbow room.
Yeah, sure.
Now, when I come out, I'm coming out of shooting.
Get him, Paul. Here they come. Who'd you say them bandits was?
Fort Toops and Wally Wimple.
Well, don't look like either one of them was Mr. Wimple to me. Too big and...
There we go. Drop them shooting irons, you varmints. It's Sheriff McGee talking to you. Drop them weapons, I tell you. I'm the law on these parts, and I'm in.
Heavenly day. That was a real bullet, McGee. They broke the Bontown window.
$20,000. Oh, no, license plate. It's a clean getaway.
Hey, who brought up this dump stud anyway?
My name is McGee, the little twerp that played the sheriff.
Why are they all the
way? Hey, come on, Molly. Come on, Molly. Let's get out of here. I'm going to get home and form a possum.
You mean a possum?
No, a possum. I'm going to play dead for a
There's something important I haven't mentioned lately, and that's the health advantage of a waxed home. Besides beauty and protection for your things, your home is cleaner, more sanitary if you keep your floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly polished with Johnson's Wax. The wax seals the pores of the wood, guards against dirt and moisture. Johnson waxed surfaces are easier to keep clean because dust and dirt do not cling to them so readily. Areas that get extra heavy wear, such as hallways or windowsills, can be touched up as often as necessary without re-waxing the entire surface. And after you've used Johnson's Wax for a while, you'll notice that with every application, your floors and furniture take on greater beauty. That's why your favorite antique has such a soft, mellow luster. It's probably been protected with wax for a long time. And whether your things are old or new, it will pay you to polish them regularly with genuine Johnson's Wax.
Did you hear what happened after the robbery?
No, I've been afraid to even stick my head out the door far enough to get the evening paper. What happened?
Well, the Sweetie Face found Mr. Wimple and Mr. Toops tied up in Wimple's garage.
Yeah?
They told her what happened, and she chased the robbers on her motorcycle and caught them at the county line.
Ooh, did she bring them back?
Yeah, but not alive.
You mean Sweetie Face? Oh, but that's murder. She can't do that. Taking the law into her own hands like that? Why, that's terrible. That's...
McGee?
Huh?
McGee, don't get so excited. It's just a radio show.
Oh. Oh, is that what it was? Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Products for home and industry.
Inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company. Hey, everyone. This is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition My favorite husband this episode is from January 13th, 1951. The episode is entitled The Cuckoo Clock, but what it's really about is a Christmas gift that Liz bought for George, a cuckoo clock, and she wrote a post-dated check, which the seller agreed to take until a certain date. And still, Liz doesn't have the money. And on top of that, Liz didn't write it on the bank account that she has. She claimed it on another bank name. I didn't think you could do that back then, but I guess most checks were open-ended checks, and you had to, I guess, annotate the bottom of the check which bank you belong to. So I don't know how they were able to do that, because I didn't live back then. Well, I did live back then, but I wasn't old enough to write a check. 18 months of age, and I couldn't write a check. I mean, sue me. Anyway, so enjoy this episode of The Cuckoo Clock from January 13th, 1951, from my favorite husband. I'll see you back here after this.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, it's the Gay Family series, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. The Oka pudding. Yes, sorry.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers, it's morning. George is at breakfast while Liz is out in the kitchen talking to Katie, the maid.
Katie, you've been with us for 10 years now, and I think it's high time I told you how much I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Cooper.
Really, Katie, you've been loyal, faithful, trustworthy, and the most efficient cook and housekeeper in town.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Cooper. How much do you want to borrow?
Why, Katie... Just because I compliment you, it doesn't mean I want to borrow money.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That remark was suspicious, uncalled for. And all I wanted was $14.95. Will you lend it to me?
Mrs. Cooper, I only have one source of income. You.
Ooh. I just don't know what to do, Katie. You know that little cuckoo clock I bought George for Christmas?
Yes.
Well, I paid the jeweler by check. Only I didn't have enough money in my account, so he let me post-date the check ahead to January 13th. And that's today. And you know what?
What?
It would be just like that dirty stinker to try and cash it.
Oh, dear.
Well, just let him cash it and see how far he gets. It'll serve him right.
But, Mrs. Cooper, if the check bounces, won't Mr. Cooper find out about it?
Katie, you don't think I forgot that George works in the bank, do you? I've got it all fixed so he'll never find out.
Well, how did you do that?
I wrote the check on another bank.
But you don't have any money in another bank.
What's the difference? I don't have any money in George's bank either.
But can't they put you in jail for writing a check where you don't have an account?
Sure, but after all, what... Ah! They could put me in jail. I didn't think of that.
Liz, come on in to breakfast.
I'll be right there, honey. Oh, I wonder if George can be smooched into a... lending mood. Oh, has my big, wonderful, handsome husband been lonely for his loving little baby girl, huh?
What are you after, Liz?
Well, I'm batting zero today. I'm not after anything.
Really?
Yes, really. So happens I was just thinking about how much I love you. And I was just going to tell you about it. Well, now I won't.
Oh, go ahead.
No.
Please?
Well, George, we've been married for 10 years now. And I just want you to know that you've been loyal, faithful, trustworthy, and the most efficient cook and housekeeper in the whole world. Oh, no, no.
What?
You've been devoted, affectionate, and the best husband in the whole world. Give me a great big kiss.
Oh, Liz, I'm glad I married you. That kiss was worth $1 million.
Really? $1 million?
Absolutely.
How much was it worth in cash?
Cash?
Yeah, how much? 100,000? 1,000? $14.95?
Liz, do you need money again?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but now that you've wheedled my secret from
Liz,
me, I...
do you by any chance remember our New Year's resolutions?
Yes.
What were they?
You agreed to forfeit $25 every time you borrowed money from me. And I agreed to forfeit $25 every time I dropped cigar ashes on the rug.
I'd say you had that hindsight, too. Here, you've already broken your resolution, and it's only January the 13th.
Yeah, that's the best I've done in 10 years.
Oh, Liz.
Anyway, I haven't broken it. I didn't ask you to lend me any money.
No, that's true.
You wouldn't want to give me some, would you?
No.
Well, all right, then. George Cooper, will you lend me $15?
You're sure that's what you want?
Yes.
It'll cost you $25 forfeit.
I don't care. I have to have the money.
Now, remember, if you start to borrow, you'll just get in deeper and deeper.
Look, Dale Carnegie, I need the money. So lend me $15 and I'll owe it to you.
Oh, no, no, you forgot the forfeit. If I give you the 15, you'll owe me 40.
Oh, getting deeper already, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay, it's a deal.
Okay.
Well, where's the money?
Money?
Yes, you owe me $15.
Well, you owe me 40.
Well, but...
I'll tell you what. We'll just take the 15 off the 40, and you only owe me 25.
Well, that's better. Hey, wait a minute. I didn't lay my hands on any loot.
Would you like to borrow another $15?
No, thanks. I can't afford it. Never mind, George Cooper. I don't need you to get money from. I have friends.
Hello, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, hello, Marie. They told me Mrs. Atterbury was here at your beauty parlor.
Oh, yeah. She's in 7, I think. By the way, Mrs. Cooper, do you want to touch up? You're showing your true colors.
Oh, you mean my part?
Part? It looks like a fire break.
Marie, I can't afford a touch-up. Still, well, a couple of weeks.
You won't need it then. You'll be a brunette.
Well, let's see how I make out with Mrs. Atterbury. Where is she?
Let's try number 7. Oh, yeah. There she is under that mud pack.
How can you tell?
I wrote her name across the forehead.
Oh, Iris, you've got to do me a favor.
I can't talk to you.
She can't answer you. That mud pack dries pretty hard. Wouldn't her husband like to get her in this condition?
Iris, listen to me. You have to lend me some money.
Ooh, what? So now look what you've done. You cracked the mud pack.
Oh, you'll pay for this, girl. What a terrible thing for you to say.
What did I say?
You wanted me to lend you money.
Well?
I was just getting ready to come over and borrow some from you.
Oh, you mean we're both broke?
Stony. Rudolph started off the new year with an economy wave.
So did George. I guess it's in the air. Darn those Russians anyway.
Liz, what do you need money so badly for?
Well, you know that little cuckoo clock in George's office?
Clean your head back, Mrs. Atterbury. I'll pluck your eyebrows.
Oh, okay. Ooh! Gently, Marie.
I'm sorry. Dull tweezers.
Hmm. Well, I paid for the clock with a post-dated check, and it's due today.
Well, the what? Cashier at the bank will put it through for you. He always does.
Marie, be careful.
Well, that's just it. I didn't want George to find out, so I wrote it on another bank.
Oh, fine. Well, look, Liz, why don't you call up the jeweler and ask him to hold the check a few more days?
Oh, I don't think he will. He doesn't like me. But I guess it's worth a try.
Hello?
Mr. Haskell, this is Mrs. Cooper.
Yes, Mrs. Cooper.
Mr. Haskell, today is the day my check is due.
Yes, Mrs. Cooper.
Mr. Haskell?
No, Mrs. Cooper.
No what?
I am not holding that check a minute longer.
Please?
No.
Pretty please?
No.
Pretty please with sugar on it?
Try pretty please with money on it.
Oh, isn't there any way I can appeal to you, Mr. Haskell?
Oh, Mrs. Cooper, please, don't start to cry. I can't stand a woman who cries.
Oh, Iris, he can't stand women crying.
He'll open the floodgates. Marie!
Mr. Haskell, have pity on me. My husband doesn't know I'm out of money, and it was a present for him. Oh, please don't make me tell him. I'll do anything if you'll just hold that check for a few days longer.
Go on, dearie, you're breaking my heart.
Who's this?
This is Mrs. Haskell. Crying women don't bother me a bit.
What a sneaky thing to do.
Well, here you are, Sam. She's dry again.
Well, Mrs. Cooper, I'm taking that check down to the bank this afternoon, and there better be something there to cover it.
There will be a little stamp marked insufficient funds.
Well, if that happens, your husband will have a little wall marked no cuckoo clock.
You wouldn't take that clock back.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Cooper, no ticky, no talky.
But Mr. Haskell...
What is it, honey?
Nothing. Goodbye. Well, I'm dead. Come on, let's go.
Where?
We've got to get that clock out of George's office before Mr. Haskell does.
Well, I don't know how to get Liz out of this spot, but I do know how to get you out of a spot the next time unexpected company drops in for supper. Just whip them up a wonderful Jell-O dessert in jig time with the new quick-setting method. Here's what you do. Dissolve your Jell-O in 1 cup of hot water. Add 1 cup of ice cubes or crushed ice, filling the cup to the brim with water. Stir until the ice melts completely, then put in the refrigerator to chill firm. And in just about 1 hour, you have a beautiful finished Jell-O dessert all ready to set on the table. It's a lifesaver for last-minute company or busy weekends or for any time at all. And all 6 delicious Jell-O flavors make the high spot of any meal. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Bursting with fruit-rich goodness and shimmering with gay color. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, and it's Jell-O for red letter desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
And now back to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband. As we look in on the Coopers once again, Liz is speeding to George's office to make off with the cuckoo clock before Mr. Haskell, the jeweler, arrives to repossess it. Meanwhile, in his office, George Cooper is just getting ready to go out to lunch.
I'll be back in about an hour, Miss Russell. I'm going to lunch.
Oh, all right, Mr. Cooper. Chew everything thoroughly.
Oh, By the way, that new cuckoo clock is running down. Now, would you please wind it for me?
You don't mean you're going to kick that thing?
Certainly.
Oh, but it's so corny.
Look, Miss Russell, my wife gave me that clock for Christmas, and I happen to think it's wonderful. Do you understand?
Perfectly. You think it's corny, too, but you're stuck with it.
Exactly.
Well, I'll wind it.
Thank you. I'll be back at once.
Oh, dear. Oh, I must have wound it too tight. Well, I'll just take it along with me. Maybe I can get it fixed on my lunch hour.
George? Miss Russell? George? Oh, good, Iris. They must be out to lunch.
What a break.
I'll just grab the clock and leave before anybody gets... Where is it?
I don't see it anywhere.
It was right on the wall yesterday. Iris! Oh!
You scared me.
Why? Mr. Haskell's already been here.
Do you think so, girl?
Of course. I was going to sneak in here and get the clock, and he sneaked in ahead of me. I've been out snuffed.
Well, what are you going to do now?
I'll tell you what. I'm going down to Haskell's and give him a piece of my mind. Well, there's the shop. Now, we'll see it. Well, how do you like that, Iris?
What?
He's got George's cuckoo clock back in his window already.
You were right, Liz.
How do you do, lady? Oh, Mrs. Cooper.
Well, what do you have to say for yourself, you big Indian giver?
What?
You should be ashamed sneaking into my husband's office and taking that clock back.
I took that clock back?
See, Iris, he admits it.
No, Mrs. Cooper. I haven't even tried to cash your check yet. My wife left to take it to the bank not 5 minutes ago. Now, I've been busy all day. I haven't been out of the shop. It's the truth.
Thank you, Iris. If it's the truth, then how did my clock get back in your window? I suppose it's a homing cuckoo.
That's not your clock, Mrs. Cooper. That's one just like it. Now, look, ladies, I'm not a well man. The Christmas season always takes a lot out of me.
I'd like my clock, please.
Now, look at these hands of mine. You see how they're trembling? I have to repair 5 watches this afternoon. With these hands, I couldn't overhaul a sundial.
I'm coming, but I'll tell you one thing, Mr. Haskell. I'll never set foot in your store again.
Well, thank you. That helps, but I'm still in bad shape.
Oh, he makes me so mad.
Now, calm down, Liz. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, yes, there is.
What? I don't like the look on your face.
I'm going to snitch my clock back.
But that's stealing.
It is not. It's my clock.
But you haven't paid for it.
I have to. He has my check.
That's right.
So he stole the clock from me, and I'm just getting back what's rightfully mine. He's the crook.
No wonder his hands were shaking.
Now, I'll tell you how I've got it planned. One of us will stay out here and keep watch while the other one goes in and gets the clock.
Okay.
And for heaven's sake, Iris, don't drop it.
Don't worry, I'll go. Oh, no, you don't. You go in and I'll stay out here.
Well, I got a better plan.
What is it this time? I'll go in and you go home?
No, I'll wait out here while you go in and divert his attention.
By doing what? A striptease?
No, he's shaky enough already.
Now, just a minute.
I'm kidding. Look, Iris, I'll do all the dirty work. I'll go in and get him to go to the back of the store for something. When he's back there, I'll whistle.
and all you have to do is come in, take the clock, and leave. That's all. It's the only way. Then he can't suspect me, because I'll be in there all the time.
Well, all right. But if I'd known we were going to pull a job, I'd have worn my bulletproof corset.
Now, remember, Iris, come in as soon as I whistle.
Good afternoon. Mrs. Cooper, what now?
Now, don't worry, Mr. Haskell. This is not about the cuckoo clock. I'd like to look at some jewelry.
No. If I make a big enough sale to you, I can go bankrupt.
Now, it's not for me. It's for Mr. Atterbury. He wants to buy his wife a present.
Oh. What does he want?
Oh, he wants, a watch.
Oh, fine. Here are all my watches right here in this case.
You don't have any in the back room?
No, they're all right here in this case.
Oh. Where do you keep your diamonds?
In a case in the back room.
He'll take a diamond.
How many carats?
Carats?
Yeah, that's how we measure the size of diamonds. Now, how many carats?
Two bunches.
Please, Mrs. Cooper. How many carats? One, two, three.
15. Ah, now you got it.
What's the matter?
I had a pain in my side.
Yeah, but I thought I heard a door slam.
Oh, no, it was my side. I have shingles.
Oh. Well, I'll go get a diamond for you. Be right back.
Okay. Mr. Haskell!
Yeah?
You sure whistle beautifully. How do you do it?
Nothing. Would you like me to whistle your chorus from Come to the Stable, Mabel?
No, thanks. Well, I'll be running along now.
Goodbye. Hey, wait a minute. What about this diamond?
Give me the clock. I'll hide it under my coat. Here.
Do you think we can sneak it back to George's office?
We can try. Can you see it under my coat?
You look a little bulgy.
Ooh, it tickles. Hey, come on, let's go. Oh, I hope they're not back yet.
Hello, Mrs. Cooper.
Oh, hello, Miss Russell.
Hello, Mrs. Atterbury. What brings you to downtown?
Oh, nothing much. We just had some time on our stomachs. Hands. Is Mr. Cooper in?
No, he's not back from lunch yet.
Oh, good. We'll wait for him in his office. Now, to get this clock on the wall before George...
Ah! Iris, look! There's a cuckoo clock on the wall.
There were two of them.
Oh, dear. I stole Mr. Haskell's clock. What'll I do?
Back to Haskell's?
Come on. We've got to unsnitch it. Well, we're stuck with a hot cuckoo on our hands. There's Haskell's. Now, how are we going to get the clock back in, Iris?
Wait a minute. Look through the windows, Liz.
Huh?
There's no one in there. He must be in the back of the store. Now's our chance.
Okay, come on.
Well, that's the whole story.
Oh, here he comes.
I told you everything I know about it, officer.
He's got a policeman with him. Let's make a run for it.
Well, Mrs. Cooper. Mrs. Atterbury.
Too late.
Keep your coat buttoned.
Mrs. Cooper, the most dreadful thing has happened. There's been a robbery.
No.
Oh!
That's right, miss.
It's a robbery, all right.
I don't understand it.
Neither do I. Why would anyone steal a cuckoo clock?
How do you know it was a cuckoo clock?
That's a very good question.
What was that?
What? I didn't hear anything. I didn't either.
Well, I did. What do you think I am? You go... Huh?
Oh, I heard something that time. Iris, do you have the hiccups again?
Hiccups?
I'm not so sure.
Honestly, officer, would I lie to you?
I heard two of them.
How do you like that? I have them too.
Hold on. Hold on. Hold it! Mrs. Cooper, I have a feeling you've got that clock hidden under your coat.
So do I.
Come here.
You can't touch me without a search warrant.
You're under arrest.
No, no, wait, officer, wait. There must be some explanation for this.
Oh, there is, Mr. Haskell. I thought you took George's clock, but I found out it was being fixed.
I'll tell you what I'll do, Mrs. Cooper. I'll drop the charges if you just pay me for the clock and settle all this.
All right. Oh. Do you mind if I write you another check?
My hands are starting to shake again. All right, write me a new one.
Well, can I date it a little ahead?
This is the 13th. Date of the 20th.
All right. There you are. Here's your check.
Thank you. Here's your clock. No. Oh, please, Mrs. Cooper, go away and leave me alone.
All right, come on, Iris. Goodbye, officer.
Goodbye.
Well, Liz, I suppose you think you're pretty smart.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just as bad off as you were before. You only have a week to get the money.
No, I've got plenty of time.
Well, how do you figure? You dated the check January the 20th, didn't you?
Sure, January the 20th, 1953.
Well, it takes Liz to come up with a surprise ending, same as Jell-O. And say, be sure to look in leading magazines for January for a full page of brand new Jell-O treats. Easy, easy, easy to make. And all delectably good to eat. You'll find sparkling strawberry Jell-O party cake, gay Jell-O clown faces, and crested apple fluff. A winner if ever there was one. Foamy whipped lime Jell-O topped with sparkling plain lime Jell-O and filled with tempting applesauce. It's pretty as a picture and tastes like a breath of spring with that fruit-rich tart lime flavor. So be sure to look it up in leading January magazines with a picture that'll make you hungry. All six delicious Jell-O flavors are bursting with wonderful true fruit goodness. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Flavors so rich and refreshing, it reminds you of the orchard and the berry patch. Look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, and it's Jell-O for red letter desserts. You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Iris Atterbury was played by B. Benaderet. Hans Conried played by Mr. Haskell. The part of Katie the Maid was played by Ruth Parrott. Be sure to watch for Lucille Ball as a would-be cosmetic dealer in her latest picture, The Fuller Brush Girl.
Does coffee, coffee, coffee make you nag, nag, nag?
It's the caffeine in coffee that really does it. The caffeine in coffee that turns an angel into a shrew.
So if coffee, coffee, coffee makes you nag, nag, nag,
switch to Sanka Coffee, the regular or the instant. Sanka Coffee has 97% of the caffeine taken out. Sanka Coffee can't make you nervous or jittery. Sanka Coffee can't steal your sleep.
So if coffee, coffee, coffee makes you mad, mad, mad,
switch to Sanka Coffee. Sanka Coffee. Sanka Coffee.
Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball and My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. The Oka pudding, yes, sir.
The name Jell-O is a registered trademark of General Foods. Bob Lamond speaking.
This is CBS, the Stars Address, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Poor Miss Brooks, every time she has a chance to go out on a date with Boynton, something always comes up. In this case, it happens to be the fact that she's babysitting on New Year's Eve. Oh my God, this is awful. Anyway, so find out what happens with our Miss Brooks and enjoy the episode from 1951, January 1st. Enjoy.
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, written by Al Lewis. Well, as some of you may remember, last night was New Year's Eve. Well, like everyone else, our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, had looked forward to celebrating with considerable anticipation. But as the poet Robert Burns put it, the best laid plans of mice and men gang aft to glay.
I don't know about the men, but I'm certainly one of the mice Robbie had in mind, because last night somebody really ganged up on my glay. Everything started off normally enough Saturday morning as I joined my landlady at the breakfast table.
Here, Connie, here's some tomato juice. It'll do you good, dear.
What is this, a down payment on tomorrow morning?
Oh, you won't need any tomorrow. Not if you come to my party tonight.
What kind of a party are you having, Mrs. Davis?
Very quiet, Connie. I've just asked some of the neighbors in to listen to the radio and maybe dance a bit. It'll be a nice, relaxed evening. Of course, I am having some help with the refreshments.
Who's helping you?
Barney, the bartender from Mulligan's Saloon.
That should lead to a very relaxed evening, earlier than you think.
Oh, he's not going to serve any whiskey. You see, ever since he's been working for Mr. Mulligan, Barney's insisted on having New Year's Eve off.
Why is that?
He can't stand drunks. Barney likes nothing better than to drop over here and make us a little friendly bowl of punch. If I remember correctly, Connie, you sampled some of Barney's punch last year.
I almost did, Mrs. Davis. Somebody jostled me as I was about to drink some, and I spilled it on my black evening gown.
I don't remember that at all, Connie.
I do. It started a run in my dress.
Oh, you're exaggerating, dear. It was a very mild mixture. Why, we even dipped lady fingers into the punch bowl after a while.
I know. And a little while after that, the lady fingers were diving into the bowl. Oh, I'm just teasing you, Mrs. Davis. I'd like nothing better than to share a little punch with you tonight, but I probably have a date with Mr. Boynton.
Probably. Hasn't he asked you yet, Connie?
Oh, you know Mr. Boynton. It takes him a week to get enough courage to speak up. You'd think he'd know where he stands by now. I've dropped him enough hints, heaven knows.
Hints?
Just yesterday I told him I thought there was nothing quite as exciting as the scent of an orchid and the popping of champagne corks.
Do you think it'll work, Connie?
Indubitably, Mrs. Davis. He'll probably take me into a florist shop and let me smell an orchid while he cracks his knuckles.
Mr. Boynton isn't the biggest spender in the world, is he, Connie?
No, I think there's a Maharaja in India who spends $8 or $9 a week more. But after all, Mr. Boynton is a school teacher, and he probably just can't... Now, who can that be? Come on in, it's not locked.
Finished with your cereal, Connie?
Yes, thanks.
Well, good morning, Miss Brooks, Mrs. Davis.
Hello, Mr. Boynton.
Now, isn't that a coincidence, Mr. Boynton? I was just going to clear away the table and clear out.
What's coincidental about that?
Now she's got a good reason to.
Exactly. See you later, folks.
Take your time, dear. Well, Mr. Boynton, this is rather a surprise visit.
Yes, Miss Brooks, I guess it is.
Want a cup of coffee?
All right.
Keeps pretty hot in this percolator. There you are.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun. What'll we do now?
Well, tonight, as you know, is New Year's Eve, Miss Brooks.
Yes, I know.
It's the one night in the year I believe in celebrating. You see, the only fun a bachelor can have, especially a bachelor school teacher, is to really let go once in a while.
Might also be fun to hold on once in a while. Don't look so shocked. I'll withdraw the statement. Strike that from the record, clerk.
The one thing I'm so grateful for, Miss Brooks, is that our relationship has always been completely honest and above board. I can talk to you straight from the shoulder.
You certainly can, Mr. Boynton.
I don't have to beat around the bush.
No, you don't.
I can come right to the point without stalling.
I hear you talking.
I don't have to mask my real intentions with a lot of pseudo-diplomacy.
Never no pseudo-diplomacy.
Well, what I'm trying to say, Miss Brooks, is that, well, several weeks ago, I promised to attend the Biologist Club New Year's Eve party at the Club Jamboree tonight.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. But the ticket cost $5, Miss Brooks, and, well, I only had enough for the one when I bought it. And, well, since then, I've had some unexpected holiday expenses and just haven't been able to afford another one. Of course, I'd love to ask you to join me tonight, but I couldn't very well invite you to pay for your own ticket, could I?
You could, but I couldn't. Pay for it, I mean. I've had some holiday expenses of my own, Mr. Boynton. 2 whole weeks of eating.
Well, I'm terribly sorry we won't be together, Miss Brooks. As a matter of fact, I suspected you were just as broke as I am. That's why I came over to see you now.
What do you mean, Mr. Boynton?
Happy New Year, Miss Brooks.
Same to you, Mr. Boynton. And thank you for a lovely morning.
That's all right, Miss Brooks.
Now let's sing 2 choruses of Auld Lang Syne, and this'll be the earliest I've ever folded on New Year's Eve.
Please don't be annoyed, Miss Brooks. I'll be thinking about you tonight from the minute I sit down in that nightclub and pick up my noisemaker.
Well, thanks, Mr. Boynton. I'll be thinking of you, too, tonight, as soon as I sit down by the window and blow my tin horn.
I guess I better be running along now. Get cleaned up for the big night.
Yes, you do that, Mr. Boynton. I've got to help Mrs. Davis with the dishes. Forgive me if I don't chase you, walk you to the door.
Certainly. Well, see you next year, like they say.
Don't take any wooden biologists. Now, that's just dandy.
What's just dandy, Connie? Oh, where'd Mr. Boynton go?
Home to rest.
Oh, we've got a big night ahead of us, eh?
We've got a big night ahead of him. Mr. Boynton is going to the biologist party alone, Mrs. Davis.
Alone? But why, Connie?
He just can't afford to take me with him. The tickets are $5 a copy. Now, if I had $5, I could... Mrs. Davis...
I'd be happy to, Connie.
You would?
Of course, but I haven't got a quarter. I spent my entire budget for this week on tonight's party.
Oh, well, thanks just the same, Mrs. Davis. No sense in worrying about it, I guess. New Year's Eve is just another night.
Maybe that's Mr. Boynton again. I'll finish up in the kitchen, Connie.
Come on in. The door is still open.
Ah, good morning, Miss Brooks.
Mr. Conklin. What fortuitous circumstance brings Madison's esteemed principal to the humble abode of a lowly faculty member?
You've seen your share of Charlie Chan movies, haven't you? If you'll forgive me, Miss Brooks, I shall skirt the preliminaries and get right to the point. Firstly, Mrs. Conklin is visiting her sister, who has a touch of rheumatism in Philadelphia.
That's a bad place to get it.
Let's dispense with the fripperies, shall we? Secondly, her sister has sent their little boy, age 6, to spend the holidays with my daughter Harriet and myself. Thirdly, I've promised Harriet she can go to a New Year's Eve party tonight. And fourthly, I have a dinner engagement with some old professor friends of mine from State Normal days.
But I don't understand, Mr. Conklin.
At this late date, it is almost impossible to secure a babysitter, Miss Brooks.
Now I understand. I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin, but I've been sitting with children for years now. I'm afraid I'm going to be busy tonight.
Ah, what a pity. It would only be until 10 o'clock, and I was contemplating payment of, say, $5.
I'd like to help you, Mr. Conklin, but it's really out of the question for me to... Did you say $5?
That is correct.
Where and when?
7:30, my home.
I'll be there, Mr. Conklin.
Thank you, Miss Brooks. Thank you very much. Don't bother seeing me to the door. I know the way.
Thank you, Mr. Conklin. Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. Mrs. Davis! Mrs. Davis!
Yes, dear. What is it?
Well, it's going to be a happy new year after all. I'm going to sit with Mr. Conklin's nephew until 10 o'clock, and he's going to give me $5.
He must be quite a well-to-do little boy.
Mr. Conklin's going to give me the $5. Don't you see, Mrs. Davis, now I can buy my own ticket to the club jamboree and see the old year out with Mr. Boynton after all.
Oh, how nice for you, Connie.
Oh, just one thing, Mrs. Davis. On our way to the club, may I stop by here to pick up some lady fingers?
But doesn't the $5 you pay include a midnight supper, Connie?
Yes, it does, Mrs. Davis.
Then what in the world do you want with lady fingers?
We've got to have something to slip the waiter.
Starring Eve Arden will continue in just a moment, but first, here is Vern Smith. Now, proof that brushing teeth right after eating with Colgate Dental Cream helps stop tooth decay before it starts. Continuous research, hundreds of case histories, makes this the most conclusive proof in all dentifrice research on tooth decay. Eminent dental authorities supervised hundreds of college men and women for over 2 years. One group always brushed their teeth with Colgate's right after eating. The other followed their usual dental care. The group using Colgate Dental Cream as directed, using Colgate's exclusively, showed a startling reduction in average number of cavities, far less tooth decay. The other group developed new cavities at a much higher rate. No other dentifrice offers proof of these results. Modern research shows decay is caused by mouth acids, which are at their worst right after eating. Brushing teeth with Colgate's as directed helps remove acids before they harm enamel. Yes, Colgate's contains all the necessary ingredients, including an exclusive patented ingredient for effective daily dental care. So remember, always use Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay.
Well, I phoned Mr. Boynton and asked him to meet me at Mr. Conklin's home at 10 that evening. At 9:30, I was still trying to get little Stevie into bed. Now listen, Stevie, it's getting awfully late. Just when do you propose to go to sleep?
Well, as soon as I get another glass of water.
But I've given you 3 glasses of water in the last half hour. What do you do with them?
I drank 2 and gave 1 to my animals. See? Uncle Osgood bought me these toys for Christmas.
They're very nice. Now get into bed, please.
Well, first tuck my lion in the bed.
All right. There, your lion's in bed.
Now my tiger.
Okay, your tiger's in.
Now put my Black Panther in.
Right, the Black Panther's tucked in. Now I'll just tuck... Stevie, why aren't you getting into the bed?
Who do you think I am, Clyde Beatty?
I wish I had a book on child psychology with me. A nice heavy one. Come on now, shove that menagerie aside and get in.
Okay.
Hello?
Is that you, Harriet?
Your daughter's dressing for her date, Mr. Conklin, but thanks for the comparison.
On the phone, all voices sound alike to me. How's my nephew, Miss Brooks?
Fine, Mr. Conklin. He's in his zoo. I mean, in bed.
Good, good. Has the dear little fellow floated off to dreamland yet?
Not quite, but one more glass of water should do it. There hasn't been any change in plan, has there, Mr. Conklin?
Why, no, Miss Brooks.
Then I can expect you in about half an hour?
I'm afraid it'll be considerably longer than a half hour, Miss Brooks. I'm staying over with some friends.
But you said you'd be back at 10.
That's right. I'll be back at 10 a.m.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin...
Awfully nice of you to do this for me, Miss Brooks. Good night and a happy new year to you.
Oh, this is terrible. Harriet! Oh, Harriet!
Yes, Miss Brooks?
Your dad just called and told me he won't be home until tomorrow morning.
I know. He's staying with some old friends of his. From Normal.
There's nothing normal about it. When I agreed to act as Stevie's sitter, I thought your father would be back at 10 tonight. I have a date at that time with Mr. Boynton.
Oh, that's a shame, Miss Brooks.
Maybe I could call your dad back so we could make some other arrangement. Do you know where these friends of his live?
No, I don't. But don't get panicky. We'll think of something as soon as I finish dressing. That must be Walter Denton. Will you let him in, please? I'll just be seconds finishing up.
All right, Harriet. Coming!
Miss Brooks, I want a glass of water.
Quiet, Stevie. Darn kid. If it weren't for him, I could go... Take it easy. I'm coming.
Happy, happy, happy New Year, Miss Brooks.
Come in, Walter.
Isn't it a wonderful night to see the old year out on? Aren't you just in love with tonight, Miss Brooks?
I'm crazy about it. Harriet will be ready in a few minutes, Walter.
Ah, dear Harriet. You know, that's what I like best about this holiday. The feeling of closeness it gives you to the one you care for. Especially during that one breathless, rapturous moment right before midnight. That moment like the hush of a giant wave ere it pounds mightily upon the golden sands. That tongueless moment of promised ecstasy culminating in a crescendo of clamorous, amorous bliss.
Have you ever been hit with a six-year-old child?
Gosh, Miss Brooks, you don't seem very happy about New Year's. Haven't you got a date with Mr. Boynton?
That's just the trouble, Walter. I have. But I also have a date to sit here with Mr. Conklin's nephew, Stevie, until Uncle returns in the morning. It was all a misunderstanding, mostly on my part.
Gee, that's a tough break, Miss Brooks. Isn't there any way out for you? I know. Maybe you could hire a babysitter to sit in your place. Of course, it couldn't be just any ordinary person. It would have to be a very special kind of sitter to fill your shoes.
You never were great in anatomy, were you, Walter? But that wouldn't work either. Even if I had the money, which I haven't, it's too late to get anybody now.
Well, here I am, Walter. How do I look?
Devastating, Harriet. Absolutely soul-destroying.
How do you think I look, Miss Brooks?
Very atomic, Harriet. You should be the center of all eyes at your party.
Gee, I kind of hate to go with you in this spot, Miss Brooks. Did you tell Walter about your dilemma?
Yeah, she did, Harriet. But we can't seem to think of any way out.
Oh, don't worry about me, kids. I'll just celebrate New Year's Eve some other night.
Maybe when Mr. Boynton comes to pick you up, you could talk him into staying here with you instead of going to his old biologist club party.
Yeah, there's a swell phonograph and some keen records you could dance to.
Maybe I'll do that. In fact, I may do that even if Mr. Boynton doesn't stay.
Miss Brooks, I want a glass of water.
Excuse me, kids. I guess I didn't tuck him in tight enough. I'll be right there, Stevie. You run along to your party and have a good time.
You're certainly noble, Miss Brooks.
I'm not noble. I'm stuck. Go ahead now. It's almost 10 o'clock.
Noble or stuck, you're solid, Miss Brooks.
Thanks, Walter. Maybe Mr. Boynton will notice it and stick around a while.
I sure hope so.
Me too. Have the best possible New Year's under the circumstances, Miss Brooks.
I'll do my best. So long, kids.
Hey, did Cousin Harriet go out with Walter Denton?
Yes, Stevie, she did.
He's an idiot.
He's very fond of you, too. Here's your water.
Oh, thanks. Hey, could I also have an ice cream cone?
No, Stevie, no ice cream cones at this hour.
With a pickle in it?
That's different. You've got to have your vitamins. No, I'm just fooling. You've eaten quite enough for one night.
Are there any pickles in the house?
No, but I'd gladly let you have the one I'm in.
Well, here's my glass. Hey, better leave it near the pitcher. I might get hungry again.
Mm-hmm. Thirsty. Oh, that's Mr. Boynton. Now, you put your little head down and dream you're a battleship.
Okay. Good night, Miss Brooks.
Good night, Stevie. I'll be right there. Oh, come in, Mr. Boynton. My, but you look handsome tonight.
Oh, thanks, Miss Brooks. You look quite handsome yourself. I'm glad to see you already. I'm just raring to go.
Well, unrare yourself, Mr. Boynton. I'm afraid I can't go with you tonight.
But you said on the phone that Mr. Conklin will be back.
Yes,
and you...
that was before he called me again. He won't be here until tomorrow morning. I can't leave Stevie alone. But I've been thinking, Mr. Boynton, we could have quite a nice time right here tonight.
Here? You and me?
And the phonograph. There are some fine records stacked over there by the sofa.
But, Miss Brooks, we have no chaperone.
Who has no chaperone? I'm here.
I'm sorry, Miss Brooks. I've already paid for my ticket, and the other members of the club expect me at the club jamboree. In fact, I promised I'd be there by 10:30.
Well, it's only 10 now. You could stay for a little while. Here, sit down on the couch, Mr. Boynton.
Well, I guess I could stay for about 10 minutes or so.
Fine, we'll have a million laughs. Do you like records, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh, say, here's quite a pile of them. Let's see what some of the titles are.
That should be fun. Here's a batch for you. I'll go through these.
Don't you think you're sitting rather close to me, Miss Brooks?
I know I'm sitting close to you, Mr. Boynton.
Well, I mean, I'm a little off balance. I don't want to break any records.
Don't worry, you won't. Say, here's a great old number. If I could be with you 1 hour tonight.
I'm a lone cowhand.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Don't fence me in.
I'm in the mood for love.
It's too late now.
I can dream, can't I?
All right, Louie, drop the gun.
Everything I have is yours.
I got plenty of nothing.
Drink to me only with thine eyes.
I want a glass of water.
Quiet, Stevie. You've had all the water you're going to get. Now go to sleep.
Okay, okay. Don't get petulant.
Maybe you should let him have it, Miss Brooks.
I'd love to let him have it. He's had quite enough, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, say, here's a beautiful number. The Bells of St. Mary's.
Oh, that is beautiful. Excuse me, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, before you answer it, Miss Brooks, I'd like you to know I've changed my mind. I just can't stand the thought of you spending New Year's Eve alone, so, well, I'll call my friends and tell them not to expect me. That is, if you still want me to stay here with you.
If I still want you. Mr. Boynton, don't move from that spot. Be right there. If I still want him, he says.
Hi, it's us, Miss Brooks.
We just couldn't stand the thought of you spending New Year's Eve alone. Come on in, Walter.
Oh, but what about your friend's party, Harriet?
We told them we weren't coming, Miss Brooks. Walter and I have decided to spend New Year's Eve right here with you.
With me? But Mr. Boynton's here.
Oh, hello, Harriet, Walter. How are you both?
Oh, fine, thanks, Mr. Boynton. We came back to help Miss Brooks celebrate the New Year.
Well, good. The more the merrier. I'm staying here, too.
Wonderful. We'll have our own party, the four of us. Won't that be just the end, Miss Brooks?
It'll be the end of something.
I've certainly had a good time so far.
So have I, drinking Cokes and playing records.
Oh, it has been rather exciting at that. Don't you think so, Miss Brooks?
Thrilling. I can hardly wait until midnight.
What are you going to do then?
I'm going to crack open a brand new bottle of sweet air and spray the kitchen.
It's almost midnight now. Gee, I wish Daddy were here.
That would be all I need.
Turn the radio on, Walter. The Club Jamboree is broadcasting their New Year's Eve party.
Oh, okay, Mr. Boynton.
Poor Daddy's missing all the fun. He and those old professors of his probably played a few games of chess and went to bed about 11:30.
Well, perhaps it's for the best, Harriet. Your father's a very high-strung man. Too much noise isn't good for him.
I've got the station.
Well, it's 2 minutes to midnight, folks, and here to give you the signal to the stroke of 12 is one of our most distinguished citizens and an honored guest of Club Jamboree. Here he is. Your friend and mine, happy-go-lucky, gag-a-minute, Osgood Conklin!
Osgood Conklin!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for that charming introduction, Professor Young.
That's him, all right.
I have just time before the old year is dead to tell you lovely people that a funny thing happened to me on my way to the club tonight. A panhandler stopped me outside the door and said, "Mister, I haven't had a bite all week." So I bit him.
Oh, great. Madison's next principal will probably be Milton Berle.
Now, when I give you the signal, let's get those noisemakers going and really let her rip. There are only 5 seconds to go. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Tonight.
Maybe it was some of Mrs. Davis's fruit punch.
Oh, gosh, Harriet, your dad's entitled to have a little fun once in a while. After all, people are only human.
Well, it is New Year's Eve.
It sure is. And it's midnight, too, Harriet. You know what that means.
I guess so, Walter. Well, come on, I'm all puckered.
Here goes, Harriet.
Mr. Boynton, do you see the work that's going on in the next yard?
Yes, I do, Miss Brooks. Although I must admit I'm a rather diffident person most of the time, I feel that this being New Year's Eve, I can take a certain liberty.
Liberty? You can take shore leave.
Well, I'm ready if you are.
I'm puckered, Mr. Boynton.
Thirsty, Miss Brooks.
Oh. Well, that's done it. If you'll forgive me, Mr. Boynton, I'm going to pour 3 glasses of water.
3? But who are the extra 2 for?
You and me. We might as well be loaded as the way we are.
Returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Luster cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Not a soap, not a liquid. Luster Cream Shampoo leaves hair 3 ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen, soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. No special rinse needed after a Luster Cream Shampoo. So gentle, Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo.
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a luster cream shampoo.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take pride in announcing that the poll of newspaper and magazine radio editors taken by Motion Picture Daily for Fame magazine showed that Eve Arden was voted the best radio comedian in 1949.
Thank you. My sincere thanks to the radio editors, Motion Picture Daily, and Fame magazine, and to every school teacher and pupil, as well as their parents and friends, a very happy New Year. Good night.
Our Miss Brooks Show, brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, and Jeff Silver. Be beauty-wise, get bath-size palm olive soap for beauty care all over. Yes, for your tub or shower, enjoy the same glorious beauty lather that millions of women have found so wonderful,
in bringing lovelier complexions in just 14 days.
Simply buy the big, thrifty, long-lasting bath-size Palmolive. Use it for your Palmolive soap facials. Enjoy its oceans of creamy, beautifying lather in your tub or shower. And say, men love it too. So let the whole family enjoy bath-size Palmolive.
Yes, be beauty-wise. Get bath-size Palmolive soap today. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to the Halls of Ivy. This Halls of Ivy comes from February 20th, 1952. The episode is entitled The Voice of the Ivy Vine. Well, William Todd Hunter Hall and his lovely wife Victoria decide to tune in out of curiosity to the campus radio program or the radio show that was going on at the time that seemed to be all the rage on the campus, where an unidentified woman is calling herself the voice of the Ivy Vine, and no one knows who she is because she's giving dirt on the faculty and students alike, and she doesn't know where, no one knows where she's getting the information from, but she's spot on and accurate. But this reminds me of the days when I was in college, majoring in broadcast communications, and we had a radio station on a small FM band back in the day, and the college would secure that FM frequency. It was a very low frequency, and it didn't go past, maybe 1,000 watts of power, which is next to nothing. And then on top of that, they would pipe it into the school cafeteria, right by the cash registers. So, and on top of that, the speaker was only like 4 inches high by 6 inches long by an inch and a half deep. So the speaker wasn't very big either. So now you're in trying to broadcast in a very noisy cafeteria next to a cash register, and no one knew we were on the air. Not even us. Because even though we were told we were being broadcast on the air when we went live, no one heard us, so there was really no reason to get nervous about being in front of a microphone because no one heard you. Our murder could have been committed live on the air and no one in the entire school would have heard it. Now, I'm sure nowadays, with digital media going on, that they probably had secured a spot through some type of app that does do broadcasting live, which people can pick up over their phones and listen to. I don't think they go by FM frequencies anymore. Maybe someone out there knows for sure if that's the case. If you've taken broadcast communications within the last 10 years, I'd like to know about it. And you could email me and let me know for sure. But I wonder, really, how college campuses throughout the country, when they have their own FM channel, how that gets broadcast to where students can hear. But anyway, enjoy this episode of The Halls of Ivy. And I'll be back after this. Couldn't get it out.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
This is Ronald Coleman
and Benita Coleman
inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Now, if you lived in a small college town and had an hour or two free in the evening, you might choose to spend it in the library or the students' union, or you might drop in at the malt shop or just wander through the tree-lined pathways of the campus. The chances are that the one place you wouldn't visit voluntarily would be the police station. But that is exactly where Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, has spent the evening while his wife Victoria attended a rehearsal of the freshman play. They have just returned home together, and Mrs. Hall is saying...
And except for the 18-year-old character lead, who seems to think that a clump of crepe hair and a case of the shakes makes him a grandfather, I think we have a very fine cast. And even he wasn't too bad after I trimmed his hedges and moderated his tremolo. But you haven't told me what you did this evening, Toddy.
Oh, I went to jail.
Really? I didn't even know they'd caught you. How'd you get out? Who sprang you? Or is it sprung?
The word, I believe, is sprung. Past tense of spring.
I thought the past tense of spring was summer.
No, spring meaning leap, as to a conclusion, which you have just done.
Oh, you mean you weren't in jail because you held up a filling station or anything?
Oh, no. I went to jail to have a talk with the chief of police, Chief Bentley, for whom I have a high regard.
Well, I suppose it's possible to have a high regard for a police chief if you go to see him voluntarily. Was this just a social call?
No, not exactly. No, we discussed a general problem which affects not only the college, but the town of Ivy, and one which we share with the rest of the nation. Is known generically as the traffic problem. Unfortunately, some of our own undergraduates are among the worst offenders. We are a nation on wheels, and our young people are all mechanically minded. A generation of tinkers.
Oh, I wouldn't say that, darling. Some of them are completely charming.
Darling, I said tinkers.
Yeah, but I'm sorry.
However, a hopped-up engine doesn't necessarily increase acceleration of good manners.
I know. They go through signals, ignore pedestrians, race each other down the boulevards. Drunk with power, that's what. Horsepower.
Yes. As Chief Bentley says, it's a shame to hand so much horsepower over to so many jackasses.
Did you and the chief find a solution to any of these things?
No, I'm afraid not, Vicky.
Don't some colleges have a ban on all students driving without special permits?
Oh, yes, but authoritative prohibition only inspires student circumvention.
How's that again?
Authoritative... To put it in the original Greek, tell them they can't and they're gonna.
Now, that I understand.
Yes.
Well, next time you give a speech at assembly, why don't you tell them you prefer a healthy student body and some of them have been quite run down lately? Hit him over the head. Get tough.
Yes, I'll have to do something of the sort. Something besides what the late Don Marquis called stroking a cliché until it purrs like an epigram. Yes, but we can't solve the problem tonight, so we... Why, it's after 10, Vicky. Somebody else still up at Ivy? I'll get it. Hello, Dr. Hall speaking. Oh, Mr. Wellman. No. Yes. Thanks, we will. Good night.
Thought you'd never get off the phone. What was Mr. Wellman so wordy about?
Well, it seems we had to turn on the radio immediately and listen to what's going on over the campus station IVY. Whatever it is, it has Mr. Wellman in a swivet.
Swivet?
Yes, dear.
Well, that should be very becoming to him. Well, let's turn on the radio, darling. It's funny, because from 10 till midnight, there's never been anything but that student disc jockey, Jack Hatter, and his platter chatter.
Platter chatter?
Mm-hmm.
With Jack Hatter. I'm afraid there are cultural influences around me of which I have been uninformed.
He's a very nice boy. I never could understand why he's majoring in biochemistry when he wants to be a radio announcer.
Well, maybe he's trying to find a preservative in which to keep his pear-shaped
tone. That was Jimmy Jones and the Joint Numbers
most radio...
with their newest recording, The Night Shift Stump. And now, folks, and I wish my father, back in about 1925, had copyrighted the words "and now," I'd be a rich boy today and wouldn't have to do this degrading sort of thing for a living. And now, see what I mean? And now the new sensational feature of our program, that turner over of leaves and peeker behind twigs, the voice of the ivy vine. For reasons instantly obvious to the listener, the voice must remain unidentified. You don't know her, but... she knows you.
I wonder why this is so interesting to Mr. Wellman.
Yeah, I bet we'll know in a minute.
Voice, you're on. Show them how you follow the ivy vine down to the roots and dig the dirt.
Hello, everybody. This is your voice of the ivy vine again. I have some really choice tendrils off the ivy vine tonight. First, a request. Will the young couple who've just set up housekeeping please return the mahogany coffee table accidentally taken from the student lounge one night last week? No questions will be asked.
I got a question. How does one accidentally lift a coffee table?
Well, it was probably stuck to the cup.
You know, I'll never understand why you don't have your own program.
I know. Yes,
what glamour girl is secretly wearing three fraternity pins at the same time? Doesn't she realize what'll happen when the morning comes? Now from our suggestion box. Couldn't our dearly beloved Prexy, Dr. William T. P. for Terrific Hall, who speaks so eloquently, have shortened his speech at assembly last Tuesday? Didn't he realize that by running overtime, he ruined three sorority pink tees and made the Ivy debating team miss the bus for Bradford?
Vicky, I didn't realize
we
that
love you, Dr. Hall, and everything you say makes sense. But couldn't you be a little more pithy and succinct? And how about a stopwatch?
Stopwatch, very good. Oh, I'll time
it. And now, finally, our weekly sprig of poison ivy. A certain chairman of a certain board of governors of a certain college named Ivy...
Wellman.
...was caught crossing 3rd and Elm against the signal light last week.
Oh, no.
The fine, as many students have found out to their sorrow, is $1. But the esteemed gentleman refuses to pay it and is demanding a jury trial. Maybe he prefers a jury to a judge on the theory that it's cheaper by the dozen.
But whether Mr. Wellman wants us to hear this, Miss Voice of Ivy had better get us up a bodyguard.
The legal farce as it develops. And that's the Ivy for tonight, gals and pals. Tune in tomorrow at this same time for more rustling leaves from the ivy vine. Good night, everybody. And remember, the eye of ivy is upon you.
And be careful. A co-ed is listening at your keyhole. And now this is your old spinner, Jack Haddon. Well, we've heard the chatter, now back to the platters. From Ivy to Jivey. Our next recording is a sequel to Shrimp Boats Are Coming, which has been boiled down to Bouillabaisse Blues.
Uh-oh, that'll be Mr. Wellman. Mr. Clarence J. Walker Wellman. I'll turn off the radio in a minute. Ooh, look at the phone, Toddy. It's beginning to smoke already.
Yes, I have it. yes, Mr. Wellman. But, Mr. Wellman, we... No, I don't think so. No. Oh, well, yes, Mr. Wellman. Well, good night.
Well, you were certainly succinct, Toddy, if not pity.
Well, I think Mr. Wellman was so upset he called the wrong number. Huh? He seemed to think I was the presiding judge and he was pleading his case. if one can plead at the top of one's voice.
So it's true, then. He did get a ticket for jaywalking. How absolutely lovely. How long can you get for that? 90 years, maybe? You think of it, 90 years in a swivet.
he's lucky he just got a citation instead of a ride in an ambulance.
Yes. Tell me, do you dare to repeat to a lady what Mr. Wellman said on the phone?
Oh, he threatened libel suits and demanded that I have the girl taken off the air immediately. He didn't give me a chance to tell him that I don't agree with him. After all, you know, it's very helpful to hear the truth about yourself I wonder who that girl is. Ah, she certainly has spunk.
Somehow I feel I've heard that voice before. I know one thing, if she keeps this up, she's going to be a terrific hit. Everybody in Ivy'll be listening to her, including me.
Well, you really think you've heard that voice before, Vicky?
Just recently, too. Let me think. Who did I see yesterday? Marion, Mrs. Quincannon, Jane, Edna? No. Tuesday? Oh, I went to lunch with Mrs. Quincannon, and in the afternoon, Jane and Edna drove us over to Marion's. No.
What about Monday?
Monday? Oh, don't you remember? That was the surprise party that Marion and Jane and I gave for Mrs. Quincannon and Edna.
We must get out and meet some new people.
I give up. I don't know where I heard that voice, but I heard it. Why don't we just call up the station and find out who she is?
No, Vicky, that would spoil their game. Oh, I suppose if I insisted, the student program manager would reveal who's responsible, but I don't want to have to do that. Any official query might stop the program, and I don't want to stop it.
No harm in having a co-ed gadfly occasionally buzz the campus, is there?
No, of course not. And as long as the voice states her facts correctly and isn't deliberately malicious, she can be an extremely useful influence. But she must be careful. She should remember the observation of Sheridan, who accused his opponent in Parliament of being indebted to his memory for his jests and to his imagination for his facts.
The Voice of America is bringing you this presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Return to the Halls of Ivy. It's the next afternoon, and Charles Merriweather, the amiable member of Ivy's governing board, has just dropped in to visit with the Halls.
Well, sit down, Charles. It's good to see you.
Always good to see you, Bill. But I must confess it's even better when I see two of you. I mean, of course, that I like
to see... I know what you mean, Charles, and there's no need to look so forlorn. She's here. Victoria, my friend is here to see you.
Oh, very discreetly put.
Mr. Merriweather. Hello.
Hello, ma'am.
Well, you're looking very gleeful today. Did your golf score go down or did the stock market go up?
No, you just came in, darling.
Oh, thank you, Bill. You beat me to it.
Well, perhaps I'd better make another entrance, huh? Hello, Mr. Merriweather.
Good afternoon, ma'am. And if I'm interrupting anything, please don't mention it. You see, I was cheating at solitaire in my office this morning, overwhelmed as I was by the pressure of business, and the Queen of Hearts kept turning up. So I said to myself, it's in the cards, Charles. You must drop by and see the Halls this afternoon. Not that you look anything like the Queen of Hearts, ma'am. You have a much better profile. Yeah, but the significance is obvious.
Well, I'm glad to be part of your deck, Mr. Merriweather.
Tell me, Charles, did you by any chance hear the mystery voice of Ivy last night?
Yes, but it wasn't by any chance, I assure you. It was on purpose. I thought she might be telling the world about my getting a ticket for super parking at the double market, or vice versa. Had a very nasty argument with a policeman who was completely right, as I was completely wrong. Attracted a large crowd of morbid pedestrians who were all hoping somebody would get slugged, and were bitterly disappointed when my wife came out, sided with the cop who gave me a ticket and a brief lecture on the evils of law-breaking. I was quite relieved when the Ivy Vine made Clarence the horrible example instead of me.
Yeah, what do you think of the latest undergraduate undertaking?
Aside from your fear of being the next victim.
Oh, you know me. I'm a controversy boy. I'm for slapping the even tenor of our ways until it brays like a baritone. Personally, I think the voice of Ivy is a very healthy influence.
What I heard of it seemed entertaining enough. It has its adolescent moments, but on the whole, it was good-natured. And while normally I would question anonymity, I think in this instance it has a dramatic advantage. An unidentified voice keeps interest alive.
Yeah, it also keeps the voice alive. I shudder to think what might happen if she were unmasked.
Charles, you keep your acute ear close to the ivy ground. Tell me, what has been the general reaction?
Well, there are two camps, Bill. The tongue cluckers and the atta girls. The way I figure it, the tongue cluckers are all horrified because they've got something to hide, and the atta girls are putting on a big front because they think that might save them. Now, one thing is sure, they're all listening. Which brings up one of my favorite subjects, the money it's costing me.
Why? Are you making side bets on who's next?
No. But as part owner of the town's only commercial radio station, I'm being hit way below my size 42 waistline. The sponsor of the 10 o'clock news broadcast is already threatening to cancel because of the competition from the Ivy Vine.
Well, you mean that the townspeople of Ivy are that interested in her?
If I knew who the girl was, I'd hire her myself. She can't miss. Everybody's going to be listening to her.
Yes, of course. I'll be listening to her comments on my next speech, and Mr. Wellman won't be able to resist. Each faculty member will be avidly listening to what she has to say about other faculty members, and the students naturally will all be... Yes, what a magnificent opportunity.
Mr. Merriweather, have you heard any rumors about who she might be?
Rumors? Suspicion is rampant and speculation is way out of hand. Every co-ed I've met this morning has greeted me in a rich, deep contralto for fear my suspicions would be aroused. My own guess is that the whimsical brains behind this project auditioned until they found somebody who could dish out saccharine in high C.
Auditioned? But Mr. Merriweather, you did it.
Ma'am, I've been accused of a number of things in my time, but if you think I'm the voice of the Ivy Vine...
Now, I remember, she's a young sophomore named Betty Gibson, a very sweet girl and a very bad actress. I heard her audition for the Dramatic Society, and I remember trying to tell her, as gently as I could, that she should take up paleontology. I didn't know what paleontology was, of course, but it sounded as if it might keep her away on field trips. Yes, I was wrong. Looks as though she's got a great future.
Well, Vicky, paleontology may still be the best for Miss Gibson in the long run. But right now, I have a better idea. Charles, are you busy this evening? Say at about 9:45?
Well, it so happens that at 9:45 this evening, Mrs. Merriweather will be 1/3 of the way to her sister's, where she's going to give away a niece in marriage, much to everybody's relief. So, happily, I am free. I never attend weddings because I have an unfortunate tendency to laugh. Heaven knows why. At a wedding. Why, what's up at 9:45?
Perhaps it's slightly unconventional for a college president, but, Vicky, do you think we dare?
Well, if I'm thinking about what I think you're thinking about, I think it's a perfectly lovely idea.
Well, thank you, darling. In that case, perhaps the three of us can pay a surprise visit to radio station IVY tonight. We'll see the megacycles at work.
Not Meg. Kill.
I will if necessary.
And please, Dr. Hall, before you start telling us what I know you came down here to tell us, I want you to know that Betty's not responsible. She really didn't know what she was doing.
Now, that's not fair, Jack. You can't take all the blame.
Look, kids, if you don't mind my butting in, I'd suggest you both listen to what Dr. Hall has to say.
Well, we didn't come here to discuss who was responsible.
Then, Betty, if you didn't know what you were doing, you were certainly doing it awfully well.
I just want to make it clear that the whole thing was my brainstorm. You see, Dr. Hall, it started as just a gag, but the response has been so terrific that I'd begun to think it might work into something, well, really big. Up to now, that is.
Well, I see no reason why it can't develop into something important for Ivy. That is, if you keep within the bounds of good taste and accuracy and public service.
You mean you're not sore?
And after what I said about you last night? Oh, Dr. Hall enjoyed that.
Yeah, you were quite correct. Stopwatch, indeed. Very good. But as long as you mix your critical thrusts with constructive pats, you'll have a balanced as well as an entertaining program.
Dr. Hall, would you mind repeating what you just told us before witnesses?
Of course not.
What'd I tell you, Betty? All the skeptics who said we'd be thrown out on our ears. I knew Dr. Hall would back us up.
Yeah, wait a minute, Jack. There are strings attached.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Hall?
Oh, you'll pay through the nose, son, before you're through. We call this a sinus operation.
We had a double reason for coming down here tonight, Jack. First, to compliment you on your enterprise, and also to ask a favor of you.
Oh, why, anything. Anything at all, Dr. Hall. You mean you want to look over our material?
Oh, if you mean censor your copy, no. Oh, no. However, we would like to make a few changes. Not cuts, just additions. ¶¶
of the ivy vine again. There's sad news tonight. You may have heard about the pathetic misadventure of one of Ivy's most distinguished citizens. Well, the Association for the Defense of the Jaywalker unhappily announces that its fundraising campaign is lagging. Only 23 cents of the dollar fine has been collected so far. Remember, friends, if you're a jaywalker, this could happen to you. So if you don't want to leave the jury at the mercy of this man, drop a plugged nickel into the nearest well. Well, man. End of the secret code. And now a surprise feature. I give you Ivy's number one voice.
Thank you. My text for this evening is, "He who taketh the law unto himself, let him ride by himself." Let us have compassion for the transgressions of our fellow man, but let us first look at his transmission. And let us not forget that he who parketh in a forbidden zone may find himself parked in a forbidding cell. That he who giveth not the right of way may be left contemplating the ticket he receiveth. Let him who would wreak havoc with the wreck he driveth be the loneliest man in town. Or, as the woman hath it...
This is hath it. Girls, he may be a 2-year letterman. He may be handsome and dance divinely. But before you date him, find out whether he's a fender scratcher, a bumper crasher, a 2-wheel turner or left lane passer. Remember, your big man on the campus may know how to hand out a smooth line, but does he know how to drive a straight one? If he doesn't, you and your crush may end up in a crash. Meet him under the lamppost if you like, but not wrapped around it.
And let us prove to each other that we are masters of our machines and that we deserve the freedom of our highways. Remember this, lest further restrictions be levied by that certain executive who sometimes maketh lengthy speeches, but who, when he maketh them in the future, will use a stoppeth watch. And now again, the voice of the ivy vine.
Thank you. Tonight, we're planting a new branch of the ivy vine to be called the heel at the wheel. Each week, we will name the student with the worst driving manners as reported by members of Ivy's Safety Council. So take it easy unless you want to be the heel at the wheel. Tonight's heel is a sophomore who ran through a stop signal.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is wall. W-A-L-L.
Really?
You bet your life! The more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is... the one, the only...
That's me, Groucho Marx. Well, here I am again, all ready to start the new season with $1,000 for one of our couples. Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Well, a couple about to be married, Groucho. They were selected by the studio audience just before we went on the air.
Really?
They are Corrine Dressler and Elmer Rich.
People?
Step right up here and meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And if you say the secret word while we're talking, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. A couple about to be married. Corrine Dressler, is that...
That's right.
And Elmer Rich, eh?
Yes, Groucho.
So you two are about to set sail on a sea of matrimony, eh? Mr. Dressler, where are you from?
I'm from the Tri-City, Dubuque, Iowa.
Is that three cities, Dubuque, Iowa?
Well, it's right on the boundary of Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa.
Oh. Well, that's very educational. And Mr. Rich? Where are you from?
Small corner of South Dakota near Alcester.
Oh, you look like Jimmy Roosevelt. Only he wears a necktie, yeah? How old are you?
22.
And you?
30.
Just think, I'm old enough to be your father. Yeah. If you think long enough, I'm old enough to be your grandfather. What sort of work do you do, Elm? I'll call you Elm. That's a tree I used to know in North Dakota.
I work for the Owens, Illinois Glass Company.
Owens, Illinois Glass Company? Where is Owens, Illinois?
In Vernon, California.
Has Rand McNally heard about this?
I mean, Owens, Illinois...
Elmer, let's start all over again. Just where is Owens, Illinois?
Where isn't any such place as Owens, Illinois?
You just said it was in Vernon, California. I hope your glass is clearer than your geography. What is your job at this plant specifically?
I'm a production recorder.
Production recorder? And what does that consist of?
Well, after the ware is put in boxes, it's put on wheel wagons.
I didn't get the first...
After the bottles, the ware...
The wares?
We call it ware.
Why don't you call it bottles? Is it too simple?
I guess so. I don't know. But anyway, it's...
Have you ever inquired? Why don't you ask the foreman at the plant why they don't call them bottles, since they are bottles?
Yeah, I don't know. I never
thought of it. You just stand there and giggle at the foreman, huh? Tell me you're a cinch to get bounced. Well, anyway, what is your job?
I'm a production recorder.
Now, we passed that point some time ago, huh?
Well, the job consists of checking out all bottles that have been packed in boxes that have been sent out of the packing room to be shipped to different customers. And I record all that, which in turn is sent to the accounting office for their records.
And then they destroy it, I suppose, huh? And where do you work, Corrine? Where do you work?
I work at Owens, Illinois, too.
For a town that doesn't exist. Owens, Illinois has a bigger population than Vernon, California. How did you meet this chap?
I was working one day, and he used to come around every hour to check the offware. And
that's what you thought.
Well, he didn't pay any attention to me for a long time, and I noticed him, but one day he finally noticed me for some reason or other, and he
what
asked
What was
me,
the reason?
I don't know.
I know, but I won't tell you. You know, two can play at that game. I can be just as coy as you can. Well, anyway, you looked him over. He had looked you over.
And finally, he came up and asked me for a date. And then after that, he used to stop around every half hour.
Must have got a lot of work done at that plant. And what is your job at the factory?
I'm a selector.
A selector?
Yes.
Isn't that strange? I knew you were a selector the moment I saw you. If I met you on the street, I'd say to myself, there's a selector if I ever saw one. Now then, what is a selector?
Well, I check all the... I mean, I pack all the ware in boxes.
You call it wares too, huh?
Yes. And I check it for all defects for... Oh, for cracks and for bullheads.
Bullheads?
Yes.
What do? Do you go fishing in this plant? Is that how you selected Elmer? You examined him to see if he was cracked? Well, let's talk about your future as man and wife. How much do you figure it's going to cost the two of you to live for a month, Elmer?
I don't believe it costs as much as it does now.
Elmer, how do you figure it'll cost you less to live after you're married?
Well, I won't be going out eating dinner every night, and going to movies, and out to races.
Is this true, Corrine? Are you going to cut down on the entertainment?
Well, we don't go out to dinner very often, and we don't go to too many movies. Haven't been to the races in a long time.
Elmer, you're trapped in one of your own bottles. Elmer, why don't you forget this girl and marry the one you've been spending all your money on? Now, just one minute. You're going to play your bet July for a chance at $1,000. Before you do, pay close attention to Fenneman, who is speaking for all of us on the show.
Well, folks, this is our first program of the fall season. And by our, I mean the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast. These dealers are glad to be bringing to you once again Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life. They welcome these weekly opportunities to tell you something about themselves and the way they try to do business. They want you to know they feel that you, as a customer, deserve the very best their service crews can give you. They try to do every servicing job as quickly and as economically as possible. The mechanics who work on your car are skilled in the latest servicing methods and have the finest equipment to work with. They aim to treat you courteously every time you drive in. So find out soon what it means to be really satisfied with the folks who care for your car. Just visit a DeSoto Plymouth dealer tomorrow.
All right, now here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question at the end of the show. You see, our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Well, that's fair enough. Here we go. Now, let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected national parks as your category. Here's your first question. How much of the $20 will you try?
Ten.
In what state is the Grand Canyon National Park?
Arizona.
Arizona is right.
$30.
All right, you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 will you bet on your second question?
$20,
huh? You don't pay any attention to her at all. All right, in what state is Mount Rainier National Park?
Washington.
Washington is correct.
They're really finding out they have $50.
All right, here's your third question. How much of the $50 will you bet?
$20.
You're betting $20?
Yes.
Just ignore them out there. Huh? Here's your third question. You're betting $20. In what state is the Everglades National Park?
Florida.
Florida is right. All right, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the $70 will you bet?
$10.
$10. In what state is Carlsbad Cavern National Park?
Oh, New Mexico.
New Mexico is correct. Well, thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go too far away. You may get a chance at the big question.
Our next couple doesn't know that the secret word is wall. Perhaps they'll say it while they're talking to you. Okay, fellas?
Perhaps.
Bring them in. We invited some women to the show tonight who operate self-service laundries. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Pauline Jenks. Her partner is a married man from the audience, Mr. Huntley Chapin. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to Your Bet Your Life. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. A self-service laundry operator and a married man. Mr. Chapin, how long have you been a self-service laundry operator?
I'm the married man.
I wondered, he had such a clean shirt on. That's what fooled me. Where are you from, married man?
Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo? Mm-hmm. Now, Mrs. Pauline Jenks, you must be the laundry operator. Now, come clean her. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Glendale.
Glendale, mm-hmm. Huh? And Mr. Chapin, what are you doing in California?
I'm living here.
Well, now that I get a good look at you, I imagine you are. I mean, what kind of work do you do?
Well, I'm in rather an unusual occupation, I believe. The fly trapping business.
What is a fly trap?
A fly trap catches flies.
That's certainly a logical answer. It doesn't clear up anything for me, but it's logical anyway. How do you mean a fly trap catches flies? Can't you catch them with your hand? Need a machine for that?
That'd keep you too busy, I believe.
Well, I have nothing to do all week, you know. Now, do you ever do your washing in a self-service laundry, Mr. Chapin?
No, I don't.
Where do you do your washing?
I don't do it.
You don't wash?
No.
Well, I suppose it's all the way you're brought up. Well, does your wife ever patronize a self-service laundry?
Yes, she does.
She does, huh? Now, Miss Jenks, tell us something about your washing emporium. What is the self-service laundry?
Well, a self-service laundry is where a...
It's a cafeteria for underwear?
It's where a housewife brings her a weekly wash.
Mm-hmm, I see. Now, as a self-service laundry operator, has anything unusual ever happened to you?
Well, not particularly in connection with the laundry business that I can think of right now. I can remember one time about 15 years ago when I was in Laguna Beach, something unusual happened.
Well, we won't tell anybody.
I was out swimming with a girlfriend, and we used to swim a long ways out from shore, and we used to swim all on natural because we could get a lot more speed.
You mean on the half shell?
And while we were swimming one day, we had a surfboard with us, and one would hold the suits while the other practiced swimming, and we'd take turns. And I happened to look towards shore, and I saw the lifeguard setting out in their boat. So I got...
How many lifeguards were there coming out?
Three
and only two girls? Well, that's Laguna for you. In Santa Monica, that'd have been seven. So anyway,
well,
there you are, naked in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
That's right.
That was the year I had to go to the mountain. That's been the history of my life. I've always made the wrong move.
Well, they rode around a couple times, then they left, and I finally had to laugh about it, too, although I wasn't laughing at the time.
Well, let's get back to the cleaning business. Now, suppose I slink into your bathhouse with my moldy laundry. What's the first thing that happens?
Well, you put your laundry in the machines, and then we give you a ticket.
I'm only going 20 miles an hour. Look, if I throw my laundry in your machine, the first thing that would happen is the machine would throw it right back. When do I put in the soap?
Well, you don't put in the soap. We put in the soap for you because...
Thank you. I'll put in my own soap.
You might put in too much and get the machine frothing.
The machine starts frothing? What do you do? Do you shoot it before it bites somebody?
No, we turn it off in that case.
All right. Now my socks are happily splashing in your machine. Now what do I do? Do I have to rinse them out?
Oh, no. Our machine does everything.
When machines start doing everything, that's when I start selling my Liberty Bond. Well, now that I know all about self-service laundry, let's see how well you two make out in the battle for the $1,000. You got to run your $20 into more than our other couples. I can't tell you how much the first couple won, but Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The young couple about to be married won $80.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected friends and companions as your category. Fenneman, be here on time in the future, will you? Or you can turn in your uniform. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
$10.
What was the name of Robinson Crusoe's companion?
Friday.
Friday is right. And they're on their way. They have $20, Joshua. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now you have $30. How much of the 30 will you risk?
30.
What was the name of John Alden's friend?
Miles Standish.
What's I was that? Going to say they have $60.
They have $60. All right, here's your third question. How much of the 60?
$30.
All right, what was the name of Tom Sawyer's friend?
Finn.
Huckleberry Finn is right. Oh, they have $90. All right, you got $90, and here's your last chance to beat the other couples. Now, how much will you bet?
Well, let's bet it all, shall we?
Make it easy.
You're going to be clean anyhow in the laundromat. You might as well be clean. Little John of Sherwood Forest was a friend and follower of what leader?
Robin Hood.
Robin Hood is right. Thank you. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $1,000 question. Fenneman.
Yes.
Come in here and tell us who's ahead so far.
The couple was just up here, the lady that runs the automatic laundry, and the married man from the audience are ahead with their $180.
I see.
Secret word is still wall.
Still wall, okay.
We went searching through the audience tonight for some people with unusual occupations. And just before we went on the air, we selected Mary Mitchell, and her partner is Mr. William Peeler. Folks, come on in here and meet Groucho Marx.
Well, welcome, kids. Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you'll find around the house. Mary Mitchell, is that right?
Correct.
Mary Mitchell, right? And William Peeler. Mrs. Mitchell, where are you from?
Libra, Missouri.
Libra, Missouri?
That's right.
What is the population of that town?
800.
800.
Before I left.
Is that why you left, Mrs. Mitchell?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, you may before the evening is over. Mr. Peeler, where are you from?
I'm from Iowa.
Now, you were chosen tonight because of your unusual occupations. Mrs. Mitchell, what is your occupation?
I am associated with the Cat Care Club.
A cat care club?
Cat care club.
Well, what is a cat care club?
Well, we rescue cats and find homes for them.
Do you give cats to anybody who asks for one? For example, could I have a cat?
Well, you would have to qualify. You'd have to be investigated.
I can't even get a skunk to live in my house. What do you mean? I've been investigated. How many cats do you have at the present time?
Oh, about 150.
Well, where do you get your cats?
Oh, people phone from all over the country, all over the county, and even other counties. Just before I came down here, a woman called me and wanted me to take care of 35 cats. She started out with one cat, started time ago, and now she has 30 cats. She's 35. She says she sees her mistake. But it's too late, so I must take the cats.
Mrs. Mitchell, biologically, that's not possible. You can't start off with one cat and then have 30 cats.
Well, she did
take
it.
You have to start off with two cats.
Well,
not much I know about cats.
I know. Two stray cats came in after she took the one cat. So she really started with three cats.
Oh. Well, that's more like it, anyway. Now, what is your unusual occupation, Mr. Peeler?
Well, I am a wood carver. I take a solid block of wood like this, and in 5 minutes and 23 seconds, I have a pair of pliers that'll open and shut like that.
Are these pliers? I thought those were bow legs.
And, well, they look like bow legs, but yeah, they're really a little pair of pliers.
Mm-hmm. They're pliers, eh?
Yes. You see,
Well, that's very clever.
Made my glasses out of wood, and my watch chain, that's made out of one solid block of wood, and it isn't put together, and you can't take it apart.
Is this for me?
Yes, that's for you. You may keep that for soon. I sell those for souvenirs.
Oh, you sell them? Oh, well, yes. Here, you better take it back. I don't want to get involved in any finance with you.
All right.
Now, where do you do this whittling?
Well, in store windows and before Kiwanis clubs and Rotary clubs and Boy Scout groups, mostly.
Is that pretty good money in your business? Is it true you're always in the chips?
Well, I managed to... I make these pliers. I sell them for $1 a piece.
Well, let's see that. I've never seen one of those. Mm. Well, that's very interesting. Is this for me?
And yes, if you want it.
Oh, you shouldn't have. I may get enough of all the brothers here tonight. Huh? I'll have his watch before he leaves here. You say people pay $1 a piece for those wooden pliers? Why?
Well, you see, I throw in a $50 bill with each pair that I sell.
Well, that's free. A pretty good come-on, huh? I can see you have a very good head for business, Mr. Peeler. Have you had it examined lately? Now, tell me, Blockbuster, that's because you're a woodcarver. Tell me, how do you make money giving away $50 bills?
Well, you see, I print my own money. That's why I can do it.
Well, that explains it. I'm relieved to know that you're not doing anything dishonest, Mr. Peeler. Now, as one counterfeiter to another, why do you do it?
Well, because, you see, we got a lot of colors in the rainbow, and we got a lot of different kinds of money, and all of the money we've ever had has always been green on the back. Well, one year I want to print the $100 bills red and the $50 bills blue and the $20 bills brown. And then I want to come out over the microphone and say, all you people that have got a $100 bill that's red on the back dated 1950, I'm going to call it in 3 weeks from tomorrow at a discount. Now, you go home and get that $50 bill or that $100 bill out from under the rug, and you go down and you buy that suit of clothes you've been looking at for the last 6 months, but you were too stingy to buy the suit of clothes because you thought more of the money than you did of the clothes. But if you hang on to the money, you're going to have to pay a discount. So when you buy the suit of clothes and the factory opens up and hires another guy and we've got more prosperity than we've got now. And that's the way I intend to eliminate all unemployment and all poverty in the state of California by just changing the money a little bit, making it different colors and putting a date on it and calling it in every once in a while.
I used to think I talked a lot, huh? Mr. Peeler, have you always been a whittler?
No. No, I have been in the real estate business, and then I ran for Congress in 1935 in the Valley. Yes.
What happened when you ran for Congress?
Well, out of 150,000 votes, I only lacked 952, getting enough to go down to Congress, because, you see, I didn't have quite enough money. My major opponent, he spent $25,000, and I only had 10. But with that 10, I bought a little automobile and put loudspeaker horns on it and had a microphone in front of the wheel, and I'd go down the street and I'd say, Peeler for the people. Peeler peels the peeling from the pension problem. He puts the plan plainly and paints pretty pictures of its possibilities. Please put this paper on your piano, and if you like him, put him in Congress. Plan to hear him tonight at the high school. Everybody come out.
I'm surprised you got any votes. Well, you've been an interesting couple, and we're happy to have you here. Now, we're going to play You Bet Your Life. You beat our other two couples, and you get a chance at the $1,000. At the DeSoto Plymouth question, that's the $1,000 question. I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but Fenneman's all going to remind our listeners.
The woman from the self-service laundry and the married man are ahead with $180.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected famous rivers as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much of the 20 will you try?
Half.
F, is that all right with you, Mr. Peeler?
Right, yes.
What is the name of the river boundary between Texas and Mexico?
The river boundary between
Texas. What is the river between Texas and Mexico?
Oh, yes, I know what that river is.
I don't know, and I wish you'd tell me.
Between Texas and Mexico? Yeah, the Rio Grande.
Rio Grande is right, huh?
And we're on our way, Glaucoma. That's $30.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 are you going to try?
Half.
Is that all right with you, Mr. Peeler?
Well, I guess so.
All right. What is the name of the South American river with the largest volume of water in the world?
Well, Amazon.
The Amazon is right.
They're on the way now. They have $45.
Here's your third question. How much of the 45 will you try?
What do you say?
Oh, we can spare 20, I guess.
20 it is.
$20. What is the name of the river that cuts through the Grand Canyon?
Colorado.
The Colorado is right.
And now they have $65.
$65 is your last chance to beat the other couples. Now, how much of the 65?
Let's shoot half of it anyway. You want to shoot all of it?
What he says, we'll
be afraid. I'd like to come out with a $5 bill anyway.
How do you care? You're going to print your own money anyhow.
Huh? Mine ain't any good, though, you see. I can't spend mine yet.
All right, kids, come on. We got another show next Thursday. What are you going to do?
$20.
How much?
$20.
$20. Here's your last. All right, here we go. London Bridge crosses what English river?
Oh, you know that.
Now, don't get your own bridge mixed up in this, huh? The Thames is right, huh?
And they wind up with a grand total of $85.
And that means the laundry lady and the married man with $180 get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question.
Friends, your DeSoto Plymouth dealer handles two really great cars, the magnificent DeSoto and the beautiful Plymouth. DeSoto, with its graceful sweeping lines, is really a new concept in driving comfort. You'll thrill to DeSoto's featherlight steering. You'll enjoy DeSoto's new chair-high seats, and you'll be amazed at the huge rear window that greatly increases visibility. Yes, and there's even more to discover about the new DeSoto. It's an economical car to operate. No car in America has bigger brakes. It brings you a waterproof ignition. And, of course, DeSoto lets you drive without shifting. So drive a DeSoto before you decide. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. No matter where you are or where you drive, look for those two great names linked together, DeSoto, Plymouth.
Well, here we are, the gal from the laundry and the fly trap, eh? All right, here we go for $1,000. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and please no help in the audience. Here it is. Ready? What is the name of the city that has been the capital of Korea for more than 2,000 years? All right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Sewell.
Sewell is right. Well, you had the right answer, so you $1,000. What are you going to do with all that money?
I kind of like...
You're going to buy a bathing suit and go back in that raft, huh?
Well, I think I'll kind of spread it around. I think...
Well, spread some around me, will you?
Money's fun if you can share it, and I can think of a few people that kind of need some.
Well, that's a good way to spend the money, yeah? Let's see, you win $1,000, and how much?
$180 in the quiz.
That's $1,180. You really cleaned up tonight. Congratulations. No. From the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast, you bet your life.
You bet your life. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, when the big question will be worth $1,000. And don't miss Groucho's television show, also presented by the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation.
And when you drive in, tell them Groucho sent you. Good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council about good highway habits. If your policy on the road is courtesy, you are always the beneficiary. You Bet Your Life is produced by John Goodell, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith, music by Jerry Fielding. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.